stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth, John Vecchione, and Janine Yunus with you. And this is my favorite kind of show, John and Janine, when we get to announce a Supreme Court victory. This is a good day. So the U.S. Supreme Court handed down the decision in Garland v. Cargill, and it's a 6-3 victory that says that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms misinterpreted the federal statutes and the rule that they had issued trying to make bump stocks unlawful has been set aside. So what do we make of this? I mean, I'll start with, I mean, my two cents on this, John, is this is an unmitigated victory. They sided with us on both of the statutory interpretation questions that were that were central to the case. First of all, the definition of a machine gun had two elements to it. One was whether or not more than one bullet was fired with a single function of the trigger. And we said, well, that's not true with a bump stock, because a semi-automatic weapon works exactly the same way whether you have a bump stock on it or not. The trigger still resets after each bullet is fired. You still have to have contact with the trigger once per bullet fired. So it's, you know, that doesn't change. And the court agreed with us on that single function of the trigger point. And the second point we made was that it doesn't function automatically, that you have to have manual inputs each time a new bullet is fired. And the court agreed with us on that as well, that you have to continue to exert forward pressure on the forestock of the weapon to make each additional shot.
So really fired. The definition of automatic.
The definition of automatically, right. So so we win on both of those, the single function of a trigger definition and the automatically definition. And
I think it's important to note this is not a Second Amendment case, despite some portrayals and the misrepresentations in the media. It's really about statutory interpretation.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This is 100%. We didn't even make a Second Amendment argument in this case, so it's definitely not a Second Amendment case. It has been even in the run up to oral argument and whatnot. It was occasionally misportrayed that way. But Janine, you're absolutely right, and it's worth noting that I think for that reason, this will reverberate outside the ATF context and outside the gun context, because this is a statutory interpretation question. And what it says is that an agency cannot exert rule-making authority outside of its statutory authority. And that's what ATF did here. And that's what the Supreme Court said that it cannot do. And that's not just going to apply to ATF. I think that'll apply against other agencies that are trying to exceed their statutory authority in the future, too.
And I will tell you, so we have the majority opinion. We have a concurrence by Alito. We have a dissent by Sotomayor with Kagan and Jackson joining in. But my as far as the media is concerned, some of the legal folks said, oh, there's no Chevron here. Well, the government didn't ask for Chevron, and there's no discussion of expertise. They didn't rely on expertise. The Solicitor General's
There actually was an expert in this case at the trial level, but it was a joint expert.
Right. And everyone kind of agreed. But the Solicitor General made a straight statutory argument, said that I win on the statute, which I didn't really believe you could possibly do given the language. And I think it's pretty straightforward. But what we saw in Sotomayor's dissent, it strikes me, is this is what they meant. They meant to do this, and that Congress of that time would want to stop this. And then she has a bunch of stuff in there that, one action of the trigger or engagement of the trigger. I couldn't follow it as that clearly, but it was clear. I think that she and Alito's concurrence agree on one thing. He says that the Congress of that time wouldn't have been able to tell the difference in watching these two things. He basically says Yeah, they probably wouldn't, but that's what they wrote down, and we're bound by their words, not by their intent. And she's saying, well, you know, we're all in this together, and there's really not a separation of powers. Congress has kind of told us what they want us to do, and so we should do it, which is like old 1970s, 60s thinking, right? So my greatest disappointment about this opinion is that Kagan joined the dissent. That's my greatest.
Well, yeah, because this was a bipartisan decision at the Fifth Circuit, and it became a 6-3 partisan split, and will be portrayed that way at the Supreme Court. I agree with you that in terms of what Alito said. Yes, I mean it. It is up to Congress as to whether or not to do this. I don't agree with him that the Congress that passed this law wouldn't have been able to see a difference between these two things, because the precise distinction that Congress made between an automatic weapon and a semi-automatic weapon is the function of the trigger.
He meant watching the guns. I took it to mean watching the guns. He would say
that the language that they used means this, and mm-hmm. we have to go with the language they used,
that's
which
true.
Suggests that their language was imperfectly capturing the distinction they were trying to make. And I don't think that's right. They understood that the difference between a semi-automatic weapon and an automatic weapon is precisely whether or not the auto sear exists, and you know, whether or not you have to pull the trigger multiple times or can just hold down and get repeat fire. They understood that, and the bump stock is definitely on the non-machine gun side of that
line. And we were mentioning all of the, I don't think I've seen a patent case with this many pictures in it. Other than a patent case with this many pictures in it, they have every picture of how it works. And then he even links to an animation that comes out of, I believe, one of the amicus briefs. And so I thought that was a fascinating part of this. I don't think I've ever been part of a Supreme Court case where we put in that there were so many illustrations. It's almost like a book to some extent.
I was happy I got to jump like 10 pages.
It was like getting a book report with Dr. Seuss, right? Oh, look at all the pictures. No, but the other thing I think we should point out is footnote 4, which talks about
it's always footnote 4, John.
Yes. That is, the sear that they use on an AR-15 is a machine gun. This is how you make a machine gun out of a semi-automatic weapon. And the law bans this, and Thomas goes out of his way to say, look, you see how it works? Here's how the sear works in an AR-15. You can't do this. So the idea that this allows all kinds of machine guns, when he goes out of his way very early on to say, look at all these type of devices. These are machine guns.
Yeah. And weren't there even Democratic Congress people who said the ATF didn't have this
authority? I did tweet out. So of all the
Senator Dianne Feinstein.
She's not Aunt active Schumer. Right now. Yeah.
The late Senator Dianne Feinstein.
But yeah. Senator Schumer said, look, I said then that this required legislation, and I'm saying now that it requires legislation, and he did not lambast the Supreme Court. He said,
"Well, that's a first for him."
Right, exactly. I was like, "Holy mackerel!" He's sticking with his priors of 4 years ago. And I will say this: I didn't see a lot of that after this.
Right, right. Well, kudos to Senator Schumer, I guess.
He said the same thing he said before, which is a tremendous virtue, I think.
Well, let's dig into this a little bit more. I think we said we're going to spend two segments on this. So what's something else that jumped out at you, from the decision that you think is noteworthy?
I think that what everyone mentioned was the Las Vegas shooting.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're going to be textualist and originalist, I thought that every single justice who wrote on the fact of what happened. What was the impetus of this and what happened? And we all remember Las Vegas. There's 58 people who died. I think there's like 500 who were injured. And so Thomas notes it, but he says that can't – basically a tragedy can't change the meaning of a statute, which is a hard shell view, but it's the accurate view. And I think that's Alito says the same thing. But then Sotomayor says, oh, no, when we have a horrible crisis like this and they do something, we, the Supreme Court, shouldn't really ever undo it, regardless of what words say. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that, I think, is a huge divide in how you interpret these things.
Well, that also strikes me as a problematic approach to take to legal interpretation.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I think she would have been on stronger ground. Suppose that the exact same language had been passed immediately in the wake of Las Vegas. Well, then you could say, well, no, look, we all know what they were looking at when they were trying to pass the law. So obviously they had this in mind and they meant to. Then you could, you know, I think she would have had a stronger argument. But I think trying to empower the ATF to retroactively interpret the law and write a new definition, essentially, or try to shoehorn a new device into a definition that was never intended to cover that device, that's not what. That's not good statutory interpretation.
And I think we discussed this, Janine, quite a bit about emergencies allowing anything.
Right. Well, yeah, that came up in COVID a lot.
And I thought there were some echoes of that in her dissent.
Yeah. And well, she seems to think a lot that way. I mean, she clearly has that same opinion in a lot of the censorship cases.
And around. And I don't think that's going to wear well because – you know, who decides? They all decided that this was an emergency and an important matter. I do have to say that. The fact that they all mentioned it and it had they had to explain what they were doing in light of it does show that the court is not just some sort of dry eerie where nobody looks down and knows what's really going on in the world. They all know, but some of them are not willing to bend what people wrote down and what the law is, and some of them are.
Yeah, I mean that's right. But you know, you didn't have that many opinions written here, right? So the six in the majority. I mean, Alito's opinion is what, a page long. I mean, he's just that's not really a separate concurrent. I mean, formally it is, but he's not disagreeing with the majority. I mean, you have six people here who signed, six justices who signed on to a very what I would call standard issue statutory interpretation opinion. Workmanlike job by Justice Thomas to parse through the statute and explain the meaning. There were a couple of places where he had where he explained it a little bit differently, and I think, frankly, a little bit better than we had in one case in our briefs. And maybe we'll get
The next segment. I want to talk about that shotgun we didn't know about, or I didn't know about. I don't remember it.
Sounds good.